Hello, I'm Jacob Kruger, and this is the Write Your Screenplay podcast. This week, we are going to be talking about Poor Things by Yorgos Lanthimos and Tony McNamara. You could describe Poor Things as essentially a hyper-sexualized, dark, feminist Forrest Gump. But what is the movie actually about? What is it saying? And how does Yorgos Lanthimos get away with all this wildness and still be able to tell a story that is hugely commercially successful? How does he both break the boundaries of what we typically think a movie or a screenplay could be, but also invite viewers in? The weirder your movie is, the more complicated it is, the simpler the premise at the center needs to be. The more you need to understand what you are building. And like all screenwriting, where does this begin? It begins with character, particularly with Emma Stone's character. Now, I'm going to give you a couple of little spoilers of the beginning to middle of Poor Things. I'm not going to spoil all the way to the end, at least not yet. So I'll warn you before I do. But in order to understand what Poor Things is about, we have to understand what the premise is. So here's the premise. Godfrey, that is, Willem Dafoe's character, has attempted to make a girl who has no shame, who has no past, who has no history, who has no external or internal factors standing in her way of just being herself. He has attempted to make a girl who is pure voice. And you can see immediately just hearing this premise, well, this is actually a Frankenstein story inside out. In this case, the Willem Dafoe character, who's called God by Bella, Emma Stone's character, the creature he's created, he is the one that looks like Frankenstein. He is the one that looks like a monster, a product of horrific experiments that his father performed upon him. He bears the scars of his history. Bella, Emma Stone's character, bears none of the scars of hers. Bella is coming at the world from fresh eyes. Now, how has she been created? Now, I am going to spoil it a little bit. A woman has killed herself for reasons we don't know, and that even God doesn't know, the character God, Godfrey. She has hurled herself from a bridge in the opening frames of the movie. And as we'll find out later, despite the stories he's told her to preserve her innocence and her sense of herself, the truth is that Godfrey, a brilliant scientist and doctor, has discovered the slight, almost still alive cadaver, pregnant with a baby. And what he has done is he has implanted the baby's brain into the woman. So what we have is a Frankenstein's monster that looks like Emma Stone, that looks like perfection, that looks like beauty, that looks like, to quote the film's ironic joke, a very pretty retard. And then we have Godfrey, the creator, right? This long-suffering, twisted, deformed God who has been tortured by his past and still carries all of those wounds with her. We have the Frankenstein's monster that has no memory of her past, that has no past, and that has been brought up inside a world that has been cultivated just for the benefit of her voice, where any action she takes is okay. She can scream. She can spit out her food. She can have a tantrum. She can pee on the floor. She can stab a cadaver in the eye. She can do anything she wants. She can follow any impulse she has and be celebrated for her growth. So we have this really simple premise at the center, right? It's just Frankenstein's monster inside out. It's a simple story that asks the question, what could you be if you didn't have a past, if you didn't have shame, if you didn't have an internal censor holding you back? Who could you be? How could it be different? How could you bloom? And also, how would you suffer? How would you struggle? How would you be taken advantage of? What would you discover? At what cost would we keep our purity and live a life without scars? And what cost do we bear the scars that make our identity, right? These are the simple questions, complicated questions, but a simple question, right? Frankenstein's monster, inside out, what would it be like to live without shame? Particularly, what would it be like for a woman to live without shame? You need something that simple to do something this weird, complicated, playful, experimental. If you experiment on top of experiment, right? If you build complicated on top of complicated, what you end up getting is mush. But when you build complicated on top of simple, what you end up getting is beauty. So at the center of this piece, we have Frankenstein inside out. Ugly, scarred creator still struggling with the story of his own past. Perfect, misbehaving, wild, untamable Bella, who has no history, has no past. And it is God's desire to keep Bella pure, to keep her a pure experiment. And for this reason, he has confined her to a house, which is where we get our next wonderful movie reference, because this movie is also a remake of The Wizard of Oz. Her Kansas, it's even shot in black and white. Her Kansas is Godfrey's home. And she has only one desire, to go somewhere over the rainbow, to be free. And he has only one desire, which is to protect her, to keep her home where she can be safe, where she can be accepted, where nothing bad can happen to her. He even brings in a medical fellow to fall in love with her, to become her husband, so that she can be happy at home. What ends up happening for Bella is that Bella ends up discovering her sexuality. Bella ends up discovering a way to feel happy when she wants it. And unlike the people around her, who are bound by their Victorian era ideas, the ideas that we still have in our society, right, around sex, who connect sex with shame, who believe in such a thing as polite and impolite society, Bella's body is her own. And it is her desire for pleasure that drives her. Now, again, as we said, if you have a complicated movie, you need to build it on a simple foundation. So what's a simple foundation? She wants to go over the rainbow. She wants to leave Kansas. She wants to see the world. And because she has no inner censor, because she has no limitations, because she doesn't have anything stopping her, she throws the biggest tantrum necessary in order to convince Godfrey, God, and her soon-to-be fiancé, that they should let her leave. And if they're not willing to let her leave, she is going to take leaving from them using the same techniques that God has used to control her. And she's going to go on a journey with a total rake of a lawyer who she knows to be exactly what he is, but who can give her the things that she wants. Sex, freedom, travel. But of course, what's actually going to happen is he is going to fall madly in love with her. And in falling madly in love with her, he is going to want to control her. In fact, this is the next level of the theme of this piece and what it's really about and what this filmmaker is actually saying. Poor Things is about a girl who wants to go out into the world. But every man in her life is going to try to control her in some way. God is going to try to control her through God's commandments, through a bunch of very well-intentioned commandments, right? It's the simple commandment that she must stay at home so that she can be protected. God is going to love her with a father's love, and she's going to have to push against his desire for control. Her fiancé is going to love her with a fiancé's love, but even her fiancé, his adoration for her, prevents him from giving her what she wants, from having sex with her, from standing up to her father, at least at the beginning. So even he, in his adoration of her, is going to end up putting her on a pedestal that is also about control. She's now going to take off with a man who says, I don't care about polite society. I care about passion and freedom and sex and adventure. But by being so purely her, she is going to change him, the character played by Mark Ruffalo, and he is going to fall in love with her too, and he is going to try to control her too in the same way, through shame. And he too is going to fail. And in his failure, he is going to go on a huge journey and become an antagonist in the piece and fail to give her the very thing that she left with him for. She is going to be left destitute, and she is going to follow her impulses towards pleasure and sex to become a sex worker, to work at a brothel. And this is a complicated piece in the movie. There are a lot of people arguing that this is an anti-feminist piece, right? That feminism is not about just following your carnal desires and allowing yourself to be exploited and not caring about it, right? And I think that is actually a total misinterpretation of what Poor Things is about. Her journey at the brothel is about discovering that human beings and men use sex for control. Discovering that the woman who runs the brothel needs to control the women inside the brothel. Learning that there are some men who prefer for a woman to not enjoy sex. To not have a choice. All of her journey is built around this question of shame versus no shame, past versus no past, voice versus no voice, freedom versus control. For all its complexity and weirdness and wildness and experimentation and otherworldliness, what's it a story about? It's a story about a girl who wants to leave Kansas, who wants to go on a journey into a more colorful world, who's going to go on that journey in pursuit of her desires. Pleasure, voice, freedom, adventure, being her own driving force in the universe. And what's going to happen to her is she is going to face, just like in any movie with any kind of structure, she's going to face obstacles, and they're all going to fit into a theme. And what's the theme? Control. She's going to face lots of different men who want to control her in different ways. And by the end of the story, just like Dorothy in Wizard of Oz, she's going to go back to No Place Like Home. She is going to go back to God. God is dying. And because she does not have shame, and because she does not have a past, she returns the same indomitable force for all the things that have happened to her, the same indomitable force that she left as. But she returns a larger, more colorful version of herself. She starts as a woman who can barely walk, and she returns as a woman in control of her own power. She has no shame, not even for the things that happened at the brothel. She has no shame for the choices she's made or even the things that we might characterize as mistakes. She has no shame for the things that do not fit the rules of society, and she is honest with her fiancé about it. And her fiancé is able to accept it. And she is honest with God about her love for him and her appreciation of him and her anger at him. She is just purely expressing herself the way that she is. And as a result, she is given a happy ending, or what seems like it's going to be one. She is to be married. And just as it is about to happen, and now there's a big spoiler coming, just as it's about to happen, she is tested by one more man. One more attempt to control her, and one more question about, can you really live without a past? Can you really set your past behind you? Can you really set those scars behind you? What if you could live without those scars, without that past, without that shame? And that person, of course, is her husband from her previous life, who appears at the moment the wedding is about to be commenced, calls her by her real name, and she makes a surprising decision. She wants to know who she was. This is the first time we've seen her look towards the past rather than look towards the future. She finally finds a test that it looks like maybe she cannot surmount. And to our surprise, and certainly her fiancé's, she leaves the wedding to return home to a life that we know previously led to her suicide. So she returns home with this new man, and she discovers two things. He is a sadistic, horrific human being who, of course, wants to control her even more strongly than everybody else. She actually returns to where she started. Now, instead of being locked in the paradise of God's home, she is locked in the gilded hell of her actual husband. She learns that he is sadistic, but she also learns that she was sadistic, that in her previous life, she was as cruel as he was. And she learns that he wants to control her in the most terrible way by taking away the thing that has driven her through the whole movie, her sexuality. He wants to perform a clitoral circumcision on her. Because he cannot accept her past. He cannot accept her choices. He cannot accept what she has done. So she goes on this whole journey where she grows in her voice despite all the things happening, only to meet her match out of her desire to recapture a past. Again, spoilers ahead. When she escapes that relationship, she returns home and she is rewarded. She is rewarded by getting to say the goodbye to God that she has needed to say, but she is rewarded in an even more powerful way. She has this wonderful line where she says about the previous version of herself that was just a story of someone else, not Bella Baxter, that she has no connection to that person. And I think this is one of the most profound moments in the movie and one of the most profound things for you to think about as a writer looking at poor things. Even having been confronted by her past, by the thing that she actually should be ashamed of, she makes a really powerful choice to not feel the shame, to not dwell in who she once was, but rather in who she is now. So I want to end this podcast with a question for you. Who would you be if you decided to let go of the scars of your past? If you decided to let go of your history? If you decided to let go of your shame? If you decided to let go of the rules of polite society? And just express your voice on the page.